Well, today I'm going to speak to you about the topics that we've heard about last week. You heard about one of those, and what do we believe? Today I'll cover three of those, three of which revolve around the Sabbath. The first being related to contracted labor on the Sabbath, owning a business on the Sabbath, and emergencies that come up on the Sabbath. You might think, well, I know all about this. I know how to manage these things and make these decisions. But I think like a frog in a pot of water, sometimes society moves ahead and we move along with it, and sometimes can let the edge of the Sabbath be lost a little bit. We can let more of the world slide in. So we'll talk a little bit about that today. But I wanted to first read an article to you. Some of you may remember this article. It was a Supreme Court case in 1977. The Supreme Court case was Transworld Airlines, TWA, versus Hardison, or Larry Hardison. The Supreme Court had interpreted Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 in setting limits to the accommodations that private employers were required to make on behalf of employees whose religious views limited their work on the Sabbath. Now, we know of many individuals that have lost their jobs over the decades because of the Sabbath. Well, this individual took them to court. And we see here that Transworld Airlines against Harding, the Supreme Court moved forward with this case. Hardison was dismissed for refusing to work on the Sabbath. In this case, TWA had dismissed Larry Hardison, a member of the Worldwide Church of God, who refused to work on Saturdays, his Sabbath. The TWA would not accommodate his request for a Sabbath exemption after he was transferred from a building where he worked the night shift to one where he would work the day shift. And in that process, he lost his seniority during the night shift. And I can remember my dad and working for the mines. It was a big deal to have seniority in different shifts because you would get priority and be able to take certain days off, and it was probably easier for him to get the Sabbath off during a night shift. The court said that a reasonable effort was made to accommodate Hardison, writing for the 7-justice majority. Justice Byron White stated that TWA had made a reasonable effort to accommodate Hardison, that it was not required to violate its seniority system to make his requested accommodation, and that alternate plans constituted an undue hardship on the employer. White observed that the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which is still in effect today, the EEOC, guidelines requiring reasonable accommodations that did not present undue hardships that did not define either term. So there was some ambiguity to how you would argue this case, and that's why it got all the way up to the Supreme Court. Some of you may remember this as being old-timers in the Worldwide Church of God when this case was occurring in the 70s. There was a dissenter, or actually two dissenters in the vote in the Supreme Court. Justice Thurgood Marshall authored that dissent in which William Brennan concurred. And quoting here, Marshall argued that the decision dealt a fatal blow to all efforts under Title VII to accommodate work requirements to religious practices. He pointed to a long line of cases, and it lays out those cases, in which the court had exempted believers from state-imposed duties and thought that it could make a similar accommodation for a private employee. And in that contrast, White and Marshall believed that congressional actions in 1972 had attempted to provide additional religious accommodations. And it goes on to quote here Marshall, that the burden under the EEOC and regulation was, he argued, was not fair or appropriate. Quoting here further in conclusion, he suggested that it could have opted to recruit a voluntary replacement. Hardison could have, or pass the overtime cost on to Hardison, or that potentially he could be transferred back to his night shift. So here you see the Sabbath was being tested in 1977. As we know, it's been tested down through the ages. And we'll read about a new article, or a new ruling from the Supreme Court here just in June. I'll get to that after we review this first, what do we believe? The first one we will cover is, should a Christian have contracted labor done on the Sabbath? Well, there's some scenarios here that will play out, we'll discuss. Deuteronomy 5, if you'll turn there, you probably know where we're headed. It's either Deuteronomy or Exodus, right? Deuteronomy 5. And when I gave a sermon a little while back, we covered these scriptures as well related to the Sabbath, but I'll be reading it in a little bit different context. Deuteronomy 5 and verse 13 says, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your ox, nor your donkey, nor any of your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates, that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. We see the similar scriptures in Exodus 20, verses 9 through 10, and we'll read that as well further down in another article here. But basically it says the same thing, quotes almost exactly. We see that we're not to compel anyone, a person, a spouse, a child, a servant, for that matter, even an animal, to do work on the Sabbath or to do any form of labor. But we also must understand the context. This isn't the age like the servants of Israel. Contractors are paid and choose to do work on the Sabbath. So it's not the exact same situation. So let's consider some scenarios. What would you think about an auto body shop? Your car is damaged, you take it into an auto body dealer. You don't know when they're going to do the work. They say it may take 2 or 3 weeks. It's possible they may do the work on the Sabbath. What about dry cleaners? You drop your dry cleaning off. Maybe you drop it off on Tuesday. Maybe they say come back and get it on Monday. You don't know when they're going to actually do the labor to clean those clothes. Ordering goods potentially on Amazon or other things, right? They're doing work to ship things and send it to your home. There's a key point here, and that's around your control. And we'll get to that. And how the business transaction is taking place. What about sale of consignment? You take something for consignment at a consignment store. They're open on the Sabbath. They sell your item. What about that? Now, certainly you would not want to go into the consignment store on the day it's sold to receive the money in the transaction. It's their business and that they're conducting on your behalf. So you can see where things begin to become something you have to consider about what crosses the line of keeping the Sabbath sanctified. How about internet sales? Facebook, Marketplace, Craigslist, selling on the Sabbath. Well, here I'll just mention in the article the church's stance. The church's stance on this is that it is fine to have items for sale online, even on the Sabbath, as long as the transaction of the payment is not processed on the Sabbath to you. If the buyer begins the transaction on the Sabbath, then the seller can typically wait and process the transaction when they choose. And I've found personally, when I've had things for sale, I don't have a lot of things that I've sold on Marketplace, but I'll try to be proactive if I'm communicating with someone that's trying to acquire something from me, to let them know that I will not be interacting during the Sabbath from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown. Or you can just simply ignore, right, the messages on the Sabbath. So in this day and age of modern technology, it's 24/7, 365. So we have to protect the bounds of the Sabbath and how we're interacting with others. So when we talk about the intent of the Sabbath, consider these other examples. How about electricity, right? Electricity's running here. We have water, we have cell phones right now that are working. There are many different examples to consider that support, and people will be working typically on the Sabbath to support these utilities that are working. But are you telling them to do that work? These are just some of the things to consider. Occasionally, we may also have to buy fuel on the Sabbath, stay in a hotel potentially as we're traveling to feast, and that might be on the Sabbath as well. And the intent is that we rest from our labors and not be compelled or compel others to do work otherwise, and not to be working for us if it's within our power or within our own jurisdiction, in other words, our properties. And for similar reasons, the church has consistently taught that it is not a violation of the Sabbath for Christians to eat in a restaurant. Now, granted, that's a personal decision, because one of the main points that's made in these articles is that you have to manage and monitor your own conscience. If there's something that you feel is going against your conscience, then you shouldn't do it. And that's certainly the choice you need to make between you and God. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 9. 1 Corinthians 5. In verse 9, we'll read through verse 13. It says here in verse 9, I wrote to you in my epistle not to keep company with sexually immoral people. Yet I certainly did not mean with the sexually immoral people of this world, or with the covetous, or extortioners, or idolaters, since then you would need to go out of the world. But now I have written to you not to keep company with anyone named a brother who is sexually immoral or covetous or an idolater, a reveler, a drunkard, an extortioner, not even to eat with such a people or a person. So consider the fact that we all sin. You might then try to argue, well, then we should never eat with each other. That's not what's being said here. If you know that someone is actively sinning and not changing, you want to limit your exposure to individuals that are openly sinning. You want to make sure you keep your distance. There's a point to the fact that you want to keep good company. You want to make sure that you are managing the influences that you have in your life. In verse 12, it says, "For what have I to do with judging those also who are outside? Do you not judge those who are inside? But those who are outside, God judges. Therefore, put away from yourselves the evil person." So we consider the sins of others, and that we are to not be thinking about how we are to be judging, especially those that are outside of the church. They don't understand the truth. Certainly, we shouldn't be in a mindset of being judgmental anyway. But we also need to understand the actions of others and what we should be a part of. That is very important. So it's not God's, as we know, this is not God's world. We cannot easily live like hermits. We can't avoid everyone. We have to interact in society to a degree. We just need to be careful with the company we keep. We should control the work that is done on our property and the things we can control. So as contractors are doing work on your own property, you should be sure to communicate with them, look, Monday through Friday is fine, but when it comes to the Sabbath, I like to make sure you don't work on the Sabbath or on a holy day for any type of work on my property, the things that I can own or that I do own. Now, there may be rare occasions, of course, where there is an emergency, right? You have a gas leak. You have a medicine or a health issue that's an emergency. You need to take care of that on the Sabbath. That's not what's being said here, where we should suffer or be in a situation that's dangerous. So some of the final thoughts here is to consider the example you're setting as well and the message you're sending with others. And the point here, and we'll read, if you want to begin to turn to 1 Corinthians 10, verse 23, it's a couple pages over, is that while we may know how we interpret and how we believe God's law to be, others may interpret things slightly differently. And if we see that we're offending them or know that something we do may offend them, we should avoid doing those things. And you can think of different scenarios where you need to be aware of others' interpretations of biblical principles. So in 1 Corinthians 10, we'll just read that here in verse 23. All things are lawful to me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but not all things edify. Let no one seek his own, but each one the other's well-being. So we could be seeing that someone's making a mistake, and we might want to think, oh, I need to set them straight. Well, it just might be the point of maturity they're at in their Christian walk. And it may, it's not our job to always be correcting everyone and to be aware of the situation they're in and be concerning, be empathetic to where they're at in that journey. So be aware of our surroundings, be cognizant of how others are reacting so that we are not offending them. Now, certainly there are circumstances where you do need to say something, and that's appropriate, but that's for each to decide. So finally, it quotes here in the article, the personal faith of the Sabbath keeper shapes his or her actions. If an action violates our conscience, we should not do it, even if there is not biblical injunction against it. Here again, quoting the article, the scriptures counsel that whatever is not from faith is sin, Romans 14, verse 23. If we find ourselves thinking, I know this is permissible, but I don't feel right about doing it, we shouldn't go against our conscience. So bottom line is, while others not in the church may choose to work on the Sabbath, we should avoid contracted labor on our own properties that we own, with exception for situations that could be dangerous or be an emergency. So I think pretty straightforward, and something we probably all understood, but just a good reminder from a church teaching perspective. I now want to mention the article I referred to earlier that just occurred with the Supreme Court in late June. You may have read about this as well. This is from the Associated Press and the Washington Bureau. The article is, the Supreme Court bolsters protections for workers who ask for religious accommodations. The Supreme Court in late June used the case of a Christian mail carrier who did not want to work Sundays, claiming it was his Sabbath, to solidify protections for workers who ask for religious accommodations. In a unanimous decision, the justices made clear that workers who ask for accommodations, such as taking the Sabbath off, should have their requests honored unless employers show that doing so would result in substantial increased costs to the business. And those are different words than were used in the Hardison case, and we'll show that, or we'll read about that. The court made clear that businesses must cite more than minor costs, known as de minimis costs, to reject requests for religious accommodations at work. At issue was a mail carrier in rural Pennsylvania. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but mail carriers will now deliver on Sundays. And that's what has been occurring for now about 10 years or so. Well, this individual felt that Sunday was his Sabbath. And the court made clear that businesses must cite more than those minor costs. Let me move on down here. U.S. Postal Service officials initially tried to get substitutes for Groff's shifts, but they could not always accommodate him. When Groff did not show, that meant more work for others. Ultimately, Groff quit and sued for religious discrimination. The federal law in Title VII, as we referred to earlier from the Civil Rights Act of 1964, requires employers to accommodate employees' religious practices unless doing so would be an undue hardship for the business. I'll pause there in the article. I looked up on our employee handbook. I work for a company that's very large, Fortune 25 company, and it says almost exactly that wording, that they will try to accommodate religious observances as long as they're not an undue hardship on the company. Well, there's a broad range of how you could define undue hardship, and that's what we'll see that the Supreme Court actually clarified here. But in 1977, this court that we referred to, or the Supreme Court case we referred to earlier, quoting here the article, TWA versus Hardison, says in part that employers can deny religious accommodations to employees when they impose more than a de minimis cost on the business. And that's what many judges were hanging on to, was what was that minimal cost that it would take to as the standard. Here, quoting Judge Alito on the Supreme Court, in this case, both parties agree that the de minimis test is not right, but they differ slightly in the alternative language they prefer. We think it is enough to say that an employer must show that the burden of granting an accommodation would result in substantial increased costs in relation to the conduct of its particular business, Alito wrote. The administration has said that requests of religious accommodation come up most often when employees seek schedule changes such as having the Sabbath off, a midday prayer break, or exemptions from a company's dress code or grooming policies. The justice sent Groff's case back to the lower court for another look in light of their decision. So we see a society that's grappling with what they would call these odd or unusual circumstances of the Sabbath. When we, as individuals that are called in the church, see the Sabbath as a cornerstone of our beliefs, yet we see a society that is carnal, that is bouncing it back and forth, trying to understand how does this Sabbath fit into our belief system. Now, I would be curious, this is speculation, if his Sabbath was on Saturday, how they might have reviewed the topic. I guess we won't know. Maybe we will down the road. We'll see. The second article I want to review in what do we believe, is can a Christian own or lease a business that is open on the Sabbath? And we've taught around this for many years. Here, we'll read here in a little bit, Exodus 20, verse 8 through 10 again. But the question will come up regarding whether Sabbath keepers can have non-believers working at their business during the Sabbath. We've heard this debate. Not so much debate. I think it's pretty clear what the answer is here, but it's just a reminder. While employees are not servants within your gates, they are an employee of yours working for your business, so the principle would still apply. Because when you own the majority of a business, you're able to direct those employees on what days they should work. So as we honor the sanctity of the Sabbath and what it means to God and his believers, we should not then have a business that is open on the Sabbath. And it's, of course, not just that simple either. Now, quoting here in 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14, says, the biblical counsel to not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers applies to business relationships, among others. However, you as a believer might be in a partnership with a non-believer, right? This can be common, where you're in a business and you're in a partnership, such that partnership may involve work as well on the Sabbath by some employees. One good principle to have that, you know, may feel a little uncomfortable when you first begin a relationship because things are going well, everything's going great, is that you ensure that you have something in writing where you're not stipulated to work on the Sabbath, where it's clear that you're able to be a minority owner and not be forced to work on the Sabbath. And making sure that you have supervisory coverage on the Sabbath so that you're not constantly getting phone calls to deal with employee issues. Even if we're a manager or supervisor, we should consider that because sometimes things happen at work. Things fall apart and employees don't know what to do. I'll tell you about an experience I had. It's been a number of years ago. I was a chief information officer for a company. It wasn't the company I'm at now. But I was getting called on the Sabbath often. And I would pick up my phone, and it was the CEO. And I would put decline, call would come again, it was the CEO. It was in the middle of services, I stepped out. My assumption was that it was a true emergency. And I kind of wanted to keep my job. So I took the call, and the call actually was him upset because he had not gotten an email from a family member that had gotten caught in our spam filters and put it in a spam folder, and he couldn't find it. He was very upset that he couldn't find that email. So I quickly explained to him it was my Sabbath, as I explained before, and I told him he needed to call another individual, that I had coverage for things like that. Eventually, that relationship became quite toxic because of his attitude and relationships with me and with others, and I exited that company. Sometimes that is the path you have to take. Fortunately, God opened up other doors that became a great blessing for my family and I. But you'll have to manage those situations yourself because they will come along and they can be very stressful. The last article I'll reference is from the Times of Israel. And this is one of their staff members wrote this. This is from September of 2022. The title of the article is Israel's Official Rules Limiting Shabbat Activity Increasingly Ignored. So there are many laws within Israel, within Jerusalem, that require businesses to be closed on the Sabbath, as you would expect, because the majority of the population are Jewish and observe the Sabbath, sundown Friday to sundown Saturday. Well, here's some research that would say otherwise. The research showed that 70% of Jewish local authorities ban cultural sites from opening on the day of rest. So it's written that they should be closed, 70% of the townships. 58% of shopping centers, 82% of museums that should also be closed as they did a survey, and over a quarter of the shopping malls. What they found was that it was contrary to that, what the businesses were actually doing. Israel is increasingly seeing significant gaps now between regulations limiting certain activities on Shabbat and the reality in the Jewish state, according to Israel Democracy Institute reports published. The document was the first IDI statistical report on religion in the state in Israel. Editors wrote that the report reveals the immense gaps between the laws and regulations regulating the balance of religion in Israel as they are written, and the reality actually taking place on the ground in Israel's cities and towns. Now, you can actually be ticketed, right? There's criminal actions that can be taken. Not criminal, I shouldn't say, but you can be fined. There are violations. And one of the statistics showed that there was an 80% drop in the last 5 years, even though the activity on the Sabbath had gone up by threefold. So you're seeing the societal effects of a world that's looking to greed and tourism, wanting to be open and make money on the Sabbath. The report found that 98% of cinemas and 82% of established museums operate on Shabbat, along with 52% of cultural centers and theaters and 26% of shopping malls that were open. And it goes on to say the number of cinemas, 42 cinemas. But it's becoming very clear that in Israel, the edge of the Sabbath is being lost. They're not observing the Sabbath as they did just 5 years ago. And the figures show that increase. For example, it jumped from 65% of museums open up to 82% in just 5 years. It's just interesting to see how things are changing in our society. And in a state in Israel where the Sabbath was to be sacred, was to be sanctified. He goes on to talk about other stats here related to commercial business. Food places that are open, 74% allow sale of food on the Sabbath, and so forth. And it concludes that across the country, enforcement of Shabbat law is uniformly lax and continues to decrease with each passing year, the author notes. So in the third article of What Do We Believe? Is what about emergencies and doing good on the Sabbath? What's our belief? What's our standard? I'll read to you again the verses here in Exodus 20, 8 through 11, similar to those in Deuteronomy. Exodus 20 and verses 8 through 11 says, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it." So we see very clear instruction that we are not to work. We should not be compelled to work. And as we've covered earlier, we clearly see that we should also manage those things that are within our control, within our property, even down to the animals. But the question can arise related to medical workers, people that are doing good and caring for others. How does this Sabbath law pertain to them in doing good? Well, let's look, I'll reference this or read it for you, Luke 6, verse 9. Then Jesus said to them, "I will ask you one thing. Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil, to save life or to destroy?" So we see here a basic principle that even on the Sabbath, we are to do good. Now, the difference here is employment and an occupation. That while it is appropriate to do good and help someone on the Sabbath, it does not mean that if you are paid as part of your occupation, that you can make work, or that you can work as a medical worker. And I think we understand that. We have nurses, doctors, other medical practitioners that do this today, and that their service would be working on the Sabbath, and that would be in violation of Exodus 20, because they would be paid even though they're helping others. And the other concept that I've seen, and this is beyond even medical professionals, that as you're managing the Sabbath, even as a medical worker, is taking shifts that others may not want in order to make the burden of someone covering your shift on the Sabbath a little bit easier. So you may take a Sunday shift when someone wants the weekend off, even in a regular job, sometimes doing a little overtime when others don't want it, just to kind of lean in and show that your work ethic is there and that you are the right type of employee that they would want. Here, quoting from the article, because this is a little bit of a sensitive topic, I think you'll see why. Quoting here says, however, a person who owns a small nursing home or a care facility must consider other principles. There are certain routine chores and needs that must be addressed on the Sabbath in these homes, just as in a private home. Some examples of routine chores would be providing meals, performing light necessary cleanup, as well as making beds, right, to keep a clean environment. However, we recommend, this being the church, that these activities be kept to a minimum. If the size of the operation is too great, the member would need to consider reducing the number of occupants or patients so that there wouldn't be too much work necessary on the Sabbath day. So this would be difficult to say, well, how many is too many? If you have this type of circumstances, was your means of living, but you would have to do the basic things, just like you would need to let your livestock have water and food on the Sabbath. So the Bible obviously doesn't speak to modern technology or modern medicine, but we can certainly draw direction from the scripture. Let's look at Luke 13, verse 10. We'll look at two examples of Jesus Christ and what he did on the Sabbath that are still practices that we have today. Luke 13, we'll read through verses 10 through 17. So starting here in verse 10, it says, now he was teaching, this being Jesus Christ, in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath. And behold, there was a woman who had a spirit of infirmity, 18 years, and was bent over and could in no way raise herself up. But when Jesus saw her, he called her to him and said to her, woman, you are loosed from your infirmity. And verse 13, he laid his hands on her, and immediately she was made straight and glorified God. But notice here in verse 14, but the ruler of the synagogue answered with indignation because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath. And certainly calling him out and accusing him of working on the Sabbath. And he said to the crowd, there are 6 days on which men ought to work. Therefore, come and be healed on them and not on the Sabbath. In other words, you can't be sick on the Sabbath. Apparently, you have to be healed on the other 6 days. The Lord then answered him and said, hypocrite, does not each one of you on the Sabbath loose his ox or donkey from the stall and lead it away to water? Not even claiming an example of a person, but you even let your animals have refreshment and water and food. So in verse 16, so ought not this woman, being a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has bound, think of it, it says, for 18 years be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath. And when he said these things, all his adversaries were put to shame, and all the multitude rejoiced for all the glorious things that were done by him. See, a very inspiring story where Jesus set the example that on the Sabbath it is appropriate to heal and to ask for God's healing. Let's look at another example, just a few pages, or another page over here in Luke 14, verses 1 through 6. Once again, this is Jesus' example. Luke 14, verses 1 through 6. Now it happened, as he went into the house of one of the rulers of the Pharisees to eat bread on the Sabbath, that they watched him closely, trying to see if he was going to slip up, if they could point the finger. And verse 2, and behold, there was a certain man before him who had dropsy. And Jesus answering spoke to the lawyers and Pharisees, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? But they kept silent. And he took him and healed him and let him go. Then he answered them, saying, which of you, having a donkey or an ox, has fallen into a pit, will not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day? An animal that's suffering, why would you not heal a person if you're going to take care of an animal? And they could not answer him regarding these things. So again, with modern technology and automation, many tasks can now be done without human intervention. And we know that. It's a different time. But we ask a few questions. Ask yourself a few questions as you consider these things. Is the emergency such that it involves real concerns about security, safety, injury, or a matter of life and death? Is the member regularly scheduled to be on call every Sabbath? This would not be advisable. It would not be a case of an unplanned emergency, but of being available to do work for the employer at his or her beck and call. So if you're in a situation where you're on call every Sabbath, that's a situation that's going to probably create trouble. The last question you could ask yourself is the emergency a rare occasion, or is it somewhat regular in occurrence? Does it hamper the member's ability to observe the Sabbath as a day of rest and worship and to regularly attend services? Now, these are in situations of your job, your occupation. Certainly, there are times when you have a spouse, right, a mate that is disabled, going through significant health issues, and you have to care for them every day. You have to take care of them. That is very appropriate and certainly something that some of you are even dealing with right now. In conclusion, we see a world that is drifting further and further away from Christian roots. The Sabbath is a sign of God's church, and globally it is eroding the meaning of what it means to keep God's Sabbath day holy. These reminders of how to observe the Sabbath and live within a society where we are the minority help us to anchor to God's truth and not interpret his word and his instruction with carnal eyes, but with understanding as those called out from the world with his Holy Spirit. I hope you all have a wonderful Sabbath day.